This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Kelly back again with a little bonus episode on the feed that you're listening to. In case you haven't noticed, I'm a sociopath who has way too many podcasts, and I've recently added yet another podcast under my belt. That is YAOK. Now, you won't hear my voice specifically on this podcast, but you will hear the voices of two good friends of mine, Alyssa Lube of the Alyssa Explains It All podcast, and Eric J. Brown, who is the writer of such books as Lose You, Define Me, and All That's Left in the World. And the concept of YAOK is that they sit down with YA authors, and they talk about their newer books and what got them into writing YA, and all the fun, weird conversations that happen along the way. I wanted to give you guys a sneak peek of an episode that we just recently released that I thought was really, really funny. This is like the first 15 or so minutes of the episode. Go and find YAOK on any podcasting app and subscribe to get the full episode of this and the other two episodes that we've released so far. But I'm really loving this show, and I think that if you're a fan of reading and you like young adult novels, it's a great show for you. Tell your friends who are fans of young adult novels to maybe check it out as well. Thank you so much for always supporting the shows that I make, guys. It means the world to me. Thanks.
You are my universe. You are my universe. And I'm just a planet.
Just so you are all aware too, I didn't have windows in my house for like, well, I have windows, but there's three windows in my house that we had to rebuild, like a bay window, and the like times for actually getting replacement windows are so insane that I just basically had no windows on that side of my house, and it's been like plywood all winter. So they're downstairs installing, well, building the like bench part of it. I told them not to bother me, but we'll see if you like.
Wow, you weren't like just being dramatic then.
I wasn't being dramatic.
Wow, no. That is.
I had no windows. We had to throw. We didn't have to. We choose to. We threw a holiday party, and it's in our dining room. So I was like trying to figure out what to do, so it wasn't just this open wound of wood and plywood in our dining room. So we hung like floor length like tinsel from the thing, like gold, and then put lights in, so it was like this little prom wall. It was adorable. And then we just put the drinks in front of it.
Beautiful. No one's gonna notice. They're going straight for the drinks.
Exactly. Now we can talk about books.
Yes.
So today, we are here talking with the wonderful and hysterical Ana Gracia. And it's Gracia, not Garcia.
Thank you.
Just make sure everybody knows that.
You know what?
Because there's two letters switched. Ana, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for being hilarious. And now there's a lot of pressure on me. And it just feels like I didn't come prepared. I don't know. Should I have jokes ready? I don't know.
Well, thankfully, I mean hilarious as in you're just naturally funny. I think you just, if you were to plan something, I think everything would just flop. It would be terrible.
Like if I just came
I'm not sure.
A tight 30-minute set.
Yeah, I don't think you could do it. I feel like
my therapist continues to assert I should be a stand-up comedian, which I think is a bad
the highest. That's the highest compliment that I could get from a therapist personally. I would be thrilled if I got that. I'd be like, that's been my entire goal in coming to these sessions.
I think it's a bad sign. I mean,
I feel like that's a terrible thing for a therapist to say. Be like, oh, you're so funny. You should make this your career. This your extremely low-paying career. You're already in publishing. Let's get into stand-up comedy.
I don't know. I mean, I might make more in stand-up comedy. You really don't know.
I guess that's true. How much do open mics pay?
Two drinks?
Yeah, exactly. My boyfriend is a stand-up comedian. I can confirm that they don't make a lot of money.
Guess what? Neither do writers.
You know what? I was watching some of your earlier interviews. I love your haircut, by the way, because I saw it was like longer in some other interviews. It looks so great. I love the little like blonde at the swoopy.
Thank you. I call it my soccer mom.
I love it. And I saw you were talking about that, like, people feel like once you get a publishing deal that you are like a millionaire all of a sudden. I think that's so funny. I guess like now that I've had these conversations, I don't think that way necessarily before. Maybe I did before that. Are people assuming that you are just like rolling in it because you've published a book?
Yeah. I think once like your name is on something, people just assume. It's like actors, right? Like when SAG was on strike and people were like, these actors are millionaires. I'm like, one of them are millionaires and everyone else is like an extra that gets paid $100 a day.
Right.
Yeah. And there's people who like work steadily in like acting and publishing both, who still need day jobs or second jobs just to keep themselves afloat. There's some people who like want to be actors and they're in multiple things, but like they are just under that part of the union amount of time that they're allowed to work to get health insurance. Oof. And so they have to get a second job to get health insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everybody's poor except for billionaires and they're never going to give out their money. So
I think they show the things where it's like they ask people like how, you know, like what percentage of the country do you think makes over like $100,000? And people will be like, oh, I don't know, like 35%. And it's something absurdly low.
Yeah. Well,
we overestimate how much money other people have.
Well, we had, so one time actually, my boyfriend was walking around his neighborhood and there were some, him and I both did a Netflix show, like a reality show. And then we do like content creation stuff, but by no means do we have like a million followers. Like it's, you know, we're very like low level on the whole scale of it. But someone had asked him to donate to I can't remember what it was, but they were working on some charity. They had like a clipboard situation and they were getting donations from everyone walking by. So he gave them $30, which like if I'm not like investigating a cause and I just have 30 bucks and I donate the whole thing, like I feel good about that. That's like a good amount of money. And they like heckled him and they were like, we know how much influencers make. You should have more than that. Only $30. And he was like, first of all, you have no idea how much money I make because it's nothing. Like he doesn't really leverage, especially it's different for boys than it is for girls, but on these platforms. But yeah, he was like, what a crazy assumption to make that I just have like oodles of money. So weird.
I think that's crazy for anybody to assume about anybody at all.
Yes, like, it is.
I think it's
also, I feel like
someone over their donation.
Yeah,
I know. It was
they could have just said no.
Right.
Or they do what I do, which is like most of the time, if it's a clipboard person on the street, I'm just like, I walk away because they actually, anytime I want to actually donate something, I'm like, okay, well, here, I'll give you this cash. Like, oh no, we can't take cash. It's only, you have to give us all of your credit card information right now. I was like, absolutely not. No, I'm not going to give out my credit card information to somebody wearing a shirt that also looks pretty crappy on the side of the street in Philadelphia. That could be anybody. It's actually probably a really great scam just to walk around asking for donations.
That's so true. Anyway. But
that's going into my like conspiracy theory, which we talked about last week. So I don't think
we should delve into conspiracy theories
every podcast.
I mean, there are them. We could.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was fun conspiracies. Anna, do you have a favorite conspiracy that's like not harmful?
Oh,
like anything?
I'm sure
fun?
I do. Shoot. I would have to think about it though.
Think about it as we're talking, and at the end you can tell us what there is. But first, tell us about I want to hear about your new book first, The Misdirection of Fault Lines. Tell us about that first, and then we'll get into your first book, your debut.
Okay. It is basically a book about three different teenage girls who go to an elite tennis tournament, which I hear tennis is very in, thanks to Carrie Soto. Who's Carrie Soto? It's the Taylor Jenkins Reid book. It's like, I don't know if it's just called Carrie Soto. It's something Carrie Soto. I don't know. I heard it's about tennis. People are talking about it. So I'm like,
oh, Carrie Soto is back. That's what it is.
And I'm like, oh, I also have a tennis book. And I'm tennis, but you could also read it. So it's about three teenage girls who are heading to this elite tennis tournament. And they each have their own sort of like motivations and hangups for competing in them. And they end up as roommates. And so it explores each path that each person has. So the first character is Alice, and she is sort of like the person that feels like they shouldn't be there. Sort of like the wild card. There's always somebody that everyone's like, wow, how did they get in? And she's that person. And so she's got those hangups and all of that. And she doesn't have money like everybody else. And she's kind of there and she doesn't know if she wants to be there. And then there's Violetta, who lives there. She's one of the like tennis academy kids that lives and boards 24/7. And she is like meant to be the next big superstar. And she's the influencer and she's like the golden child and she's ready to win. Her mom used to be a professional. It's like, right, heritage, everything's going down. And then their third roommate is Layla, who used to be a top star and then disappeared from the tennis world 2 years ago. And no one knows what happened to her. And now she's back and she is pissed at everyone and ready to, you know, she's the I'm not here to make friends person on the reality show.
Love it.
I think my most important question is how much does Violetta get paid as an influencer?
You know, I think about that and then I was like, I don't know how much influencers get paid. So instead I went with she gets a lot of free products, which felt reasonable, right? Like I was like, okay, she could like barter for products and that seems realistic enough.
That's true. And then the other truth is that all influencers are so rich. That's why I'm in my parents' house.
And the free stuff is actually publishing as well, because I get free books all the time now too. I didn't used to. My first like full first year of like being a debut author, I was expecting free books all the time. Nobody sent me anything. And now all of a sudden, I've like in the past week, I got like three books in the mail for free. It's so exciting.
I'm sorry, what? People are just sending them to you?
Yeah. And they even sent my agent an email asking if they could send me books too, which is so exciting.
Be like, I actually live at two residences. This other one is in San Francisco. And just address it to someone else. It's fine.
Address it to my assistant, Anna.
Thank you.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. You
know, I thought that getting free books was way cool too. And then the first time I brought home like a huge stack from a convention, I was all excited and I like gave them to my kids and they were very blasé. Like, oh,
really?
Thanks. And I was like, these aren't even published. And there's like a whole stack and they're free. And you people are supposed to be nerds. You should appreciate this more.
Kids just don't appreciate the value of free books.
Thank you. I know. I'm like, they really do. Oh, what? You can just go to the library? Fine, whatever.
Fine, whatever. Oh my gosh. Okay, but The Misdirection of Fault Lines sounds awesome. I like that this is a story that's not, maybe it is like somewhere down the lines, the fault lines perhaps, that is like overtly a rom-com or like a young adult that's like romance centered. I like that there's other stuff going on and it's just about the journey of these girls in this like, I'm sure, highly competitive environment.
Oh yeah, I don't write YA romance.
I should be we'll get into that even more with the first book.
They are not romances. Please don't go in thinking they're a romance. No, this is definitely like a friendship story and it's kind of exploring just the different sort of relationships. I think that tennis is a really interesting like microcosm of sports because it is so wealthy and it is so white and so expensive. And so in this book, all three of the girls are Asian American, but sort of like differing types of Asian and amounts of Asian, and sort of like how that affects, I know, well, there's really not a better way to say it, sort of how that affects their journey through this world, because it matters.
I do love that it is like a sister story too. It's like they're it's just about like them being like kind of learning how to be friends, and it doesn't focus on that romance. It is just more about sisterhood and just like kind of connecting with people on a level that doesn't have to be romantic. And that's, I think, what's so exciting about this. I think there's a lot of kids who aren't looking for romance only kind of plots in YA. I think that there's plenty of people who are looking for YA with romance subplots, or even the whole plot is about romance. But I think that there's an entire market of kids who are like, well, I do want to read things that don't focus on just the romantic stuff. So I am excited for kids to get to read this one. Especially, you're right, like the microcosm of the tennis world. And it is a very specific type. Like, even I've been reading, I think I'm like halfway through it right now. And just, I know you made up this tennis invitational. It's
Bastille?
Is the school called Bastille too? Or is it just the invitational?
It's like a tennis academy.
Right? Yeah.
It sounds so real.
It does. And it's like, just like I think it's in like the first couple of pages, you're like, It's weird that somebody, it looks like somebody's idea of what France looks like put in Central Florida. And I was like,
I love that.
That is absolutely something that would happen. This feels so realistic.
I mean, if it was going to be anywhere, it was going to be Florida.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, who would throw a bunch of money somewhere to make something hideous? Florida.
Florida
would. Yeah, Florida
would. It works for Disney. Why not for the tennis elites?
Exactly. Have you ever heard people use the phrase, like, it looks like they drew something from memory? Like, it sounds like it would be like, this school looks like if someone drew France from memory.
It's like the back half like that horse illustration where they're like, the front half is done and then the back half is sketched.
Yeah. I love that. I feel like I would go to like Brandy Melville and buy a t-shirt that's this big that says Bastille tennis with like two tennis things. Like, that feels, honestly, I think you could make some great merch for this. And you know who would buy it?
Me. Yeah.
Graphic design will be my passion. I mean,
all comic sans.
See, if this were not a podcast, I could pull out. So my mom made for all of us when we became adults. We had all these tennis t-shirts from all these tournaments, right? You get a free t-shirt and they're almost always hideous. And so she took all of these t-shirts and she stitched them into a quilt. And they're so fun to see, because I mean, you can see them and you'd be like, oh, that was the 80s. Oh, that was the 90s. I mean, the design is really very reflective of the times.
That's amazing. Wait, so you did play tennis like throughout your life?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's very cool. So did you compete in competitions like this, like the one you describe?
Sort of. I mean, this one's a fake one, but yes. I mean, I started playing tennis as a kid. I think I played my first tournament at like 7. And then I played all the way up through college. So, and then I stopped for a long time because I was burned out like so many other college athletes.
Fair enough. I have my worst sports story, the one that I tell when people ask if I play them and why I don't, is tennis related, because my dad put me in tennis lessons. He really tried very hard to find a sport that I would like. So this was certainly not the first one, but I was so bad that my instructor thought I might be left-handed. I'm not, but he was like, let's just try. And so he had me play left-handed. That also didn't work. I don't know why he thought that. He was, in retrospect, probably like a high schooler. So he was like, let's just see what happens.
To be fair, so I've also coached tennis and I have done that and they have turned out to be left-handed. So
no, it's a legitimate thing.
Like, you're like, well, this person's really bad. Maybe they're left-handed. And it does happen sometimes.
That's
maybe
so
I'm left-handed.
We're finding out something new.
Although it's also weird because there are people that play sports left-handed but are right-handed, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Like Nadal was his uncle, you know, Rafael Nadal. Yes, Nod. Do you know who that is? Okay.
Everybody knows who Rafael Nadal is.
Just as Nadal. Okay. All right. So he's like one of the greatest tennis players of all time. And okay. He is
known for being a lefty, but he is not left-handed. And so his uncle said when he was training him to play tennis, he purposely trained him to be a lefty because lefties are so much harder to play. So he's right-handed in everything in life except tennis.
And then he ended up being exceptional at tennis. That's wild.
I mean, I think there's also their whole lives for this, right? Like, you don't accidentally become a pro tennis player.
Right.
That should be a rom-com. Somebody who accidentally becomes a pro tennis player. And it's just like, oh, I just have this natural gift. That's a villain, actually. That is a villain. For,
no,
because everybody works so hard would be so pissed off.
No, you know what it'd be like? It would be like that that woman snowboarder. Do you remember what happened in the last Olympics? There was like this woman who qualified for the Olympics in the half pipe, like skiing or snowboarding. And essentially she was like a beginner skier. Like she couldn't do anything. And essentially she had qualified because she had paid to go to all these international competitions. And essentially you qualify if you place in the top X number of international competitions. So she basically bought her way in by flying to all these low populated tournaments and then qualifying for the Olympics. And people were so mad. You should Google it. It's like,
wow.
It's offensive how bad she is.
That's like the girl who bought her way onto the New York Times bestseller list a few years ago.
Wait, what was that? Kind of books. I'm sorry. Good job.
Yeah, exactly. We got to bring it back to books somehow. And it was a YA novel too.
That's why it was Scandal. If it were nonfiction, they'd be like, oh, everyone does that.
Yeah. Well, nonfiction, they all have the little plus signs.
I know, and they all do it. They all buy themselves onto it.
This one she didn't, though, because I think the cutoff for bulk buying is like, I think it's either 5,000 or 2,000.
Wow. Why in my head was I thinking it was like 20?
No.
Wow, 20 is a lot of books at once. You're like, it's 5,000.
Maybe it is that. I don't know. But she was basically calling bookstores. We'll have Phil Stamper on the podcast at some point because he's the one who kind of exposed the whole thing happening because he was working at Penguin at the time. I think it was Penguin. But like there is a certain way that you can buy under, like just under whatever the bulk purchase is. And she was calling independent bookstores and buying in bulk just under that number. And knowing that those independent bookstores, she would call all of them and ask if they report to the New York Times. And if yes, then she would buy a certain amount of her own books from them. And this is it was her first book. It was self-published and it didn't have any marketing, but she was friends with the guy from American Pie. And
which one?
He's not the main character, and he's not Stifler, and he's not, he's, I think, the nice guy, whoever was with Ara Reed, I think, he was going to make it into a movie, and she was going to star in the movie, and they had this whole plan.
Ooh, and she was
and then Phil Stamper, and they were going to sell the books at Comic-Cons, too, after it became a New York Times bestseller, and because of that, New York Times does not go by sales anymore. That's why it's a curated list.
It wasn't a curated list before that then. This is
no, it was like, it was basically you could buy your way onto it and people would probably do that, but it's like they had a little bit of marketing behind them. This book, there was nothing. No one had heard about it.
You know, it's really hard. I'm kind of torn. On one hand, like, you got to respect the hustle. I mean, that is serious dedication. Like, if you're going to subvert the system, she went all in. Like, she was like, I'm going to work in bulk. I'm going to star in the movie. And, like, I mean, it's hard to be mad at that kind of, like, zest.
Yeah, that's a solid hustle. But also, all I'm thinking of is the, like, if her book was, like, $15 and she spent all this money buying them, why didn't she just use that money towards a marketing budget?
Because this is more effective, I guess. I mean, think about it. Then you're like, I'm a number one New York Times bestseller.
Yeah, it's like a sure like thing that you would actually. That's wild.
And I think at the time it was like it would have been shocking to see this self-published book debut at number one on the New York Times list. Like that is its own marketing, and I mean, technically it was its own marketing thing because then her career went down the toilet. But it's also she was spending all of this money on the books knowing she was getting a discount on them since it was like just under that bulk buy. And then yeah. on top of that, she was getting all of the books, and then her plan was to go around to Comic-Cons with it and sell it at full like face value. So she was actually making money on it, probably.
I mean, she had a full business plan, apparently.
Yeah. Wow.
Business schools would love her. They would be like, look at her. This is like the epitome
of an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Maybe it was the American Pie guy's idea. He was bankrolling the whole thing as a producer.
That's so wild.
I love that you just referring to him as the American Pie guy.
I don't know his name.
No, I
didn't know his name when he was in American Pie. Oh, it's Eugene Levy. That's who his that's his name. No, I'm just joking.
Oh,
what that was. That would be so
oh my
upsetting.
God.
I was like, wait, what?
It's like of all the people.
Just kidding.
Not
Eugene
know.
Levy had nothing to do with that. I need to say I was just kidding.
Oh my God.
Producer Matt wants to know which character Kevin, I think.
It's important to know. I know. Because you know why? Because Kevin Klein also did a movie about authors.
Not that one. He played the character Kevin. This guy played the character.
Oh, it's the
Kevin,
little one.
Yes, the little one. Oh, I forgot he was shorter.
Rookie of the
yes,
Year.
Yes, he was in Rookie of the Year. Yes, that one. Thomas Ian Nicholas.
Okay. Wait, Rookie of the Year. That's the one set in Minnesota, isn't it?
I don't know. I just remember he breaks his arm, right? And then just has the really bad, really good fastball.
Yeah, and doesn't he like pitch for the Twins? There are only so many things that have Minnesota on them. And as I'm from Minnesota, I like am obligated to know all of them. And I want to be clear before you ask, Fargo is in North Dakota. Thank you.
We know.
No, you know what? People don't know. And they ask all the time and they'll be like, oh, don't you know? Are you from Fargo? And I'm like, hey, that's rude. I don't make fun of your accent. Okay. Fargo's in North Dakota. So get an atlas.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.